ESPN Daily is presented by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven.
There's no signed contract. There's an agreement among three gentlemen, and there is a commitment from 41 presidents and chancellors and 41 athletic directors to do what we say we're going to do. If there's any lack of specificity in the press release, it's because we want to make sure we could deliver 100% of what we promised. So we're aligned in how we want to approach this, but there's no contract, there's no signed document, and there doesn't need to be.
That is Pac-12 Commissioner George Kliavkov doing something no lawyer would advise when it comes to a critical, ostensibly life-changing agreement. Forgo paperwork entirely. But despite its lack of signatories or specificity, the keys to this new alliance between the Pac-12, the Big Ten, and the ACC are obvious. Money, power, and respect. So today, with the college football season almost upon us, we measure the sport's most recent earthquake and brace ourselves for the aftershocks to come. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, August 27th. This is ESPN Daily.
I hear you, Pablo.
Awesome. There we go. So, Paul Feinbaum, we're going to talk about actual football in a second here, but I want to begin by talking about like the risk board of college football, the map that is continually getting redrawn, or at least there are gestures that indicate it's about to be redrawn. So when you were watching that press conference this week, Paul, the press conference with the commissioners of the Pac-12 and the ACC and the Big Ten, all making this announcement about an alliance, what was going through your mind?
Well, I had a lot of comedic thoughts, Pablo, but I was mostly trying to figure out what and why they were doing it. It's a kind of a corporate cliche to say, you know, let's have a meeting to discuss having a meeting, but that's really what I got out of that, and I tried to be patient.
Paul Feinbaum hosts The Paul Feinbaum Show and is a co-host of the ESPN College Football Podcast.
But I expected these three gentlemen, and they're all very accomplished, to come up with something substantive. They really had nothing to say. You know, if they had just simply said, okay, we're here because the SEC stole our lunch money. They took Texas and Oklahoma, and we have to fight back because we report to presidents. I would have had respect for them, but instead they said, well, that had nothing to do with it. And then they gave a lot of a laundry list of things that they really care about.
Oh, yeah, the mutual appreciation for academics, right? The pursuit of diversity, inclusion, justice, equity, all of those things. They mentioned all of that, yes.
The bottom line is this is about money. I can't act surprised, okay? But I am a little bit amazed, even going back to this week. You know, the main reason those three were having a news conference was because of the Big 12 implosion, losing Texas and Oklahoma. And Pablo, guess who was not invited yesterday? The Big 12.
I was going to ask you about that. Maybe the Big 12 should have gotten an invite to this announcement to announce more announcements.
I mean, at least they could have put the Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlsby at like a kid's table and, you know, with a dunce cap on. And I mean, he was suddenly persona non grata. And then all three of them said, well, we think a lot of Bob and he's doing a great job and we want him to succeed. I mean, this is kill or be killed.
I mean, usually, you know, when they're dividing up Poland or some territory or whatever, there are, at the very least, signatures involved. The idea that they came out and said that this was a handshake agreement born of a mutual appreciation for all these very fluffy things.
Well, Pablo, I started thinking of all the times in my own life where I've tried to get out of something and somebody reminded me that there's a written agreement. I'm like going, but you know, I didn't read it.
Yeah, I bought 47 years of AppleCare. I forgot that, but I guess I am not legally liable for that.
I didn't realize I bought the entire block, Geek Squad for life. I mean, I'm sorry. You know, there was a reason for that. And we found out the next day It has to do with antitrust violations that some lawyers in the aftermath have said, now, hold on a second, guys. There are things in this country that you can't do, and you form a cabal here, and you might be going against not only the grain, but against the law. And Kevin Warren is the commissioner of the Big Ten. He's a really smart guy. He also happens to be a lawyer. So I think he probably knew that going in.
Yeah, so this cabal, this group of schools that are now clearly fighting for their lives, because you mentioned what the Big 12 had just gone through, fearing the SEC will gobble everything up. It does have this feeling, Paul, of like this attempt at like an oligopoly, or at the very least, some sort of like group of schools staving off a monopoly. How much of this is just explicitly very much about existentialism driven by the SEC?
I mean, I'm sitting in a studio right now that says SEC Network, so maybe nobody is listening, but here's the deal. And I know this sounds like I'm just shilling, but I'm not. The SEC did not go and recruit the University of Texas and Oklahoma. They wanted out of that league, the Big 12, that, by the way, was not invited to the press conference. They wanted out of it for a couple of reasons. The Big 12 went to its television partners. That would be ESPN and Fox. And they wanted to renegotiate. And I don't remember which one said no, or maybe they both did. But Texas and Oklahoma found out the money was not going to be driven up. So they started looking around. And guess what? They called the SEC first. And here's the thing that drives me up the wall. And I'm speaking primarily about Texas because they are an AAU sanctioned school, which is a kind of highfalutin language for a little higher class than maybe Oklahoma when it comes to the academic snobbery of America. However, if Texas had called the Big Ten, they would be in the Big Ten today. They would be in the ACC. They were nearly in the Pac-12 10 years ago, if you remember. And can you imagine the SEC commissioner, the hot seat he would be on? If it had been reported, okay, in the New York Times today, oh, by the way, the SEC did not want Texas and Oklahoma. They're happy with Missouri and Arkansas.
So one of the many things, the many big things not addressed in this announcement, Paul, it's the question of scheduling of actual games, because one of the upsides of this whole alliance would be, okay, we're going to schedule non-conference games with each other inside of this new alliance that we've now built. But they didn't talk about that at all. Why didn't they?
Because it's a ruse. You know, one of the best games of the year in college football is Oregon and Ohio State. That's Pac-12, Big Ten. We don't need an alliance for that game because the good teams want to play the good teams. But I have a feeling the SEC commissioner is probably saying, you know what, we're adding a conference game probably in a couple of years because our conference games are so good. But, you know, do you really want to, there's a game, I think it's in October, and I can probably get you tickets. Duke and Northwestern are playing this year. That's ACC, Big Ten. I'm sure there's going to be a network that will cover that game, and probably the one that we're currently employed by. But that doesn't mean people will watch it.
This idea of non-conference scheduling being like theoretically the point of all of this, that, hey, we're going to form this alliance such that we help each other exclusively and everyone else is on the outside. Because look, as you say, the Big Ten is incredibly powerful here, right? They led all of college sports in revenue last year, even ahead of the SEC. They could theoretically want to do that, but they're not doing that. And the reason they're not announcing that right now is why to you?
I think the Big Ten commissioner knows this, that nothing that was said on Tuesday really matters. Well, I wanted to say he showed up. I mean, Pablo, they didn't even waste frequent flyer miles to meet
That's
in the
right.
middle somewhere. These conferences are headquartered in Greensboro, North Carolina, Chicago, and I believe L.A. or San Francisco. I can't remember where the Pac-12 is this week. If it's so important, wouldn't they have like shown up? And I know COVID's out there. We all do, of course. But, you know, that would have shown me that they care. They basically got on a Zoom call. That's what that was yesterday. That was a Zoom call that happened to go nationwide.
Yes. And so this idea that, okay, at the very least, these teams have all committed to being at this party and not poaching teams from each other, not turning the party against itself. Is that going to hold, do you think? What does the history of the sport suggest to you as that concern goes?
Well, it won't hold long term, but short term it will for this reason, Pablo. All three commissioners have looked around, and there is only one attractive school out there that could be what I would call a, oh my goodness, can you believe they're in this league? And that's Notre Dame. But back to your question, nobody's going to poach anybody right now, because if there was somebody worthwhile out there, they would go get them. But since there isn't, they are going to wait and see which way the wind blows.
All right, Paul, after the break, as we wait for all of that wind to blow, I want to ask you about what all of this chaos really means as college football tries to get back to normal in 2021.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So what's extra funny to me about all of this, Paul, and there's a lot of funny here as we've now discussed, but it's funny that all of these schools, Texas included, Oklahoma included, they're still just playing the schedules they entered all of this year with, you know, like there's no change on the scheduling front this season. So how much is all of this alliance dealing, all of that stuff, how much is that going to linger over this season as we get hopefully, you know, a full slate of actual football games?
I think what happened this week is going to go away as quickly as it came. I don't think there's going to be much to it because there is a lot of change going on in intercollegiate athletics. And, you know, there's a constitutional convention in Philadelphia. And I'm
what are you talking about? What does that mean?
The NCAA is having a what they're calling a constitutional convention in November. It's in Philly and nobody has to wear powdered wigs, but they are going to try to redo their constitution. And I mean, ultimately, you know, there's going to be a lot of change. But what we really saw yesterday, to put it in a nutshell, is we saw the Power Five go to the Power Four, and the Big 12 has exited stage right.
And it feels like the next act of this whole drama to play out would then be the college football playoff and all of the changes that are getting discussed around that, right?
The next big card on the dance ticket is the CFP expansion. Now it's on hold. That is about a number of things, including who televises it. And right now, ESPN has the exclusive rights to it.
And yes, that brings us to ESPN, our employer, Paul. Because look, there are all kinds of fingers pointed at how the broadcast rights are getting all tangled up with the playoff, which I obviously understand. This is massive, massive business. But the central question here about the sports of it, I mean, this is around expanding the playoff to 12 teams, which would make more room, which would create more variety. So we don't have the same teams playing for the title year in and year out, would be the theory.
I have no earthly idea. I mean, you're closer to the suits at ESPN than I am, Pablo. I'm just at an outpost in North Carolina.
Paul, this recording closet in my bedroom is definitely a locus of power in our empire. You're absolutely right.
It doesn't matter to me. I just would like to see the expansion of the college football playoff.
I mean, what we're talking about really, Paul, to just translate even more bluntly here, is that these schools are concerned that with the rise of the SEC and obviously with the TV rights the way they are, they feel like they might be left out in this game of musical chairs, that there'll be fewer slots for them to sit in as the playoff is concerned.
Exactly.
But all of that is to say, Paul, there are now questions about actual football that I have for you, because if you look at the playoff we've been describing here, right, and in the last 28 slots, there have been four teams that have taken 20 of them. So we're talking, of course, about Alabama, about Clemson, about Oklahoma, about Ohio State, 20 of the 28 slots taken by those teams in the history of this thing. Alabama, of course, just won it, reigning champion again. Who's most likely to bump one of those teams out of this four-team bracket?
Well, it's not. I'm not really going too far out on a limb, but I think Georgia has the potential to, only because you didn't. I don't think you mentioned their names a minute ago. I may have been ordering lunch. I couldn't remember. They are in the best position for the reason that they played Clemson in the first game. So, and even if they lost that game, they would still be in an excellent spot should they run the table, then do the unthinkable and beat Alabama. But I'm struggling to find a school that looks like a really good dark horse. And a lot of callers to our show are pushing LSU, thinking it's 2019 again. And I'm saying that's really good. But unless you can get Joe Burrow back, I'm not buying. Now, Alabama is automatic. It's a de facto pick, but I really like Oklahoma, too, because of the quarterback. So, unfortunately, college football is pretty much the same as it is every year.
Well, Paul, you raised the question of your callers, and I'm fascinated by both your existence and your relationship with those callers because you have this... You're plugged in. You have this connection to the people across this sport that pretty much no one else in the world has.
Hey, Paul.
Hi.
First of all, hey, cow turd, you better shut your freaking mouth. You understand me, you little weasel?
No, you're not going to talk to me, Paul, but, you know, you are a jerk. You really are a jerk. You know, I've added to the show, but you know, you've stirred up all this crap over the last 5 or 6 years against me.
As this season is concerned, what do you feel from the people? Like, how would you characterize what's different about how America is feeling about college football in 2021?
I thought there would be enormous excitement about it, and I think there is, but there have been so many issues that have gotten in the way. NIL, the Alston ruling, the expansion of the playoffs, and now the Texas-Oklahoma, and now the alliance or whatever it is, that I think are at least from the media standpoint, we've taken our eyes off the ball. And I think, unfortunately for the fans, Pablo, what I heard all spring was, I can't wait to get back in the stadium. I can't wait to see my friends again. And I hate to turn serious here on this podcast of all podcasts, but COVID has really it's dimmed some of the enthusiasm about getting back on campuses in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, the COVID protocols and all of it, Paul, what realistically, how do you personally brace yourself for what we may get and what we may not?
I think compared to last year, this is going to be very smooth. But that's, I mean, what does that mean? Compared to last year, which was a nightmare for everybody who's listening to this, I feel like there's a little bit of a blind approach to it. If suddenly you start seeing, oh my goodness, we have COVID issues, I think it's going to rattle some fans. I mean, we had a coach at Auburn the other day test positive, and it just so happened to be a coach who at media days would not answer the question about whether or not he had been vaccinated or not. So that's a pretty obvious story.
Yeah, I mean, how will your network of fans, Paul, react if there is a COVID forfeit, which would be something that seems quite plausible this season?
I think pretty badly. There was a little bit of reaction this week, Pablo, to LSU, of all schools, announcing that they were going to require COVID vaccination proof or a PCR test. I'm thinking, can you imagine 7:30 on a Saturday night in Baton Rouge at Tiger Stadium, and some guy from Plaquemine Parish is arguing with the guy saying, I don't believe in this vaccine, and all of us, I want to go to the game. I mean, these are some scary thoughts.
Paul, so many cell phone videos of arguments in lines to get into stadiums. That's where my brain goes immediately.
None of us are laughing at the seriousness of it, but you mix COVID, Deep South, proof of vaccination, and I can promise you it will be a nightmare.
The other thing that everybody seems to be agitated about this season, this past off season, as it were, is the transfer portal as a concept. I mean, this season especially, there seems to be chaos flowing through it. What do you think of what the transfer portal will be doing as putting a stamp on this particular season? I mean, there are quarterbacks now, seemingly, that have come through that will make differences. How do you see the transfer portal as a portal of chaos in your sport?
It has already changed things. An expert told me the other day about 5% of the people in the portal are finding work, so to speak.
5%.
It was a great concept. Yeah, exactly. It was Tom Luganville from ESPN who said that to us. It's a great way to shore your lineup up, but it's creating chaos for the players because too many of them are going in there thinking it will be greener on the other side, and they end up going nowhere. And I mean, it's really sad, but everybody nowadays, the second you find out you're not a starter, you're in the portal, and then there's no turning back.
So, Paul, considering all of this and obviously name, image, and likeness, the other enormous force that is roiling the entire sport, it seems like there's real question about, like, what is this sport going to look like in 5 years? So when you look at this map, the risk board again of college football in a half decade, what do you think you're looking at?
Well, I think for starters, you're going to see a handful of conferences. You're going to have super conferences, Pablo. I don't think there's any getting around that. In spite of what we heard yesterday, there's going to be the have and the have-nots, and I wish I could come up with a more eloquent, more intellectual description, but I think that's the best way to make it understandable. And if you are not a superpower, you're either going to be fighting for your life or your program is going to go under. I think it's going to be the dark ages in many respects.
Paul Feinbaum, I am looking now at vividseats.com. I am seeing a 50-yard line, fourth-row ticket for Duke Northwestern going for $30. $30. I'm looking now at Oregon, Ohio State, same site, $1,990. So should I send you the invoice or how do you want to complete this transaction?
No, my strong recommendation would be to hold on for Duke Northwestern. You'll get a better deal.
Paul Feinbaum, thank you for telling us about this sport that I still struggle to understand.
Well, Pablo, I am here any day of the week to help better educate you and anyone out there who needs a little refresher course on the vagaries of college football.
Okay, coming up, we go back to school with the only college freshman in America with two NBA titles, J.R. Smith.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Here's another story I want you to know. So it's the time of year when college freshmen are all heading off to campus for the very first time. And judging by the reaction he gets from his fellow classmates, one particular freshman at North Carolina A&T is already fitting right in.
What's up? You coming here for what?
I want to know.
Get a degree?
I got anything else. I just need my degree.
Yes, the recently retired J.R. Smith may have two NBA titles and also approximately 1 zillion memes to his name, but he's now after something bigger, a college degree. Because Smith had skipped college and went straight to the pros out of high school in New Jersey, but now he's a real live freshman at North Carolina A&T, and he just joined the golf team at the HBCU. Estelle Dockery is a senior at NCA&T, and she wrote about this new student at her school for The Undefeated. Estelle Dockery, where are you right now?
I am currently in my apartment in Greensboro, North Carolina.
So you're a senior at North Carolina A&T, you're a freelance writer for The Undefeated, you're in Greensboro right now, and you received an exclusive interview with the person I'm most fascinated by on this planet right now, East, to be honest with you, your classmate, J.R. Smith. What is the atmosphere like on campus with J.R. down there right now?
Oh, wow. The atmosphere is just electrifying, really. Everybody's excited to have him here. A lot of people didn't even believe he was actually joining the golf team or even was truly going to enroll at North Carolina A&T. So every time people see him, they get really excited. And he's very, very down to earth. He always takes pictures with the faculty, the students, the staff members. So everybody's really just happy to have him here. It's very exciting.
The idea that JR just pops up on campus somewhere, just describe the reaction, paint the scene for us as a writer as to what a scene like that is like.
The Student Center is always filled with students grabbing lunch in between classes. You know, you have Chick-fil-A over here, Einstein Bagels, the Aggie Wings spot. People just chilling out on the steps. We have this big, long rail of golden steps in the middle of the Student Center. And so there's lines, people holding books and everything. And the next thing you know, here comes J.R. Smith walking in with maybe, an assistant or two of his. And people are like, oh, my God, is that him? Hey, bro, can I take a picture with you? Can I get a snap? Can I get a boomerang? And he just welcomes it all. It's really lovely.
All right. Oh, wait,
can you get some pictures?
Yeah, get some pictures.
Come on.
Oh, yo.
I mean, it's a football team. We're on the live right now. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I said I actually cried. You heard?
So you sat down with JR after the madness of his emergence on the scene dies down just a little bit. And what does he tell you about his decision to attend college? Because I'm still trying to, I love this story so much. Why is he doing this?
Honestly, it was funny during the interview. Actually, we always have people introduce themselves as if you're in class or for any interview, really. And just him saying, hi, my name is J.R. Smith. I'm a freshman here at A&T. I thought that was kind of amusing. But he's really doing this just to not only better himself, but to show other younger Black males and females that they can do the same, that you're never too old and it's never too late to, evolve and get your education. And what he told me was that really the conversation sparked between him and Ray Allen, who's like a mentor of his. And I believe in one interview, he kind of called him like his personal Michael Jordan that he looks up to. Mm. That's how much he admires him. And so the conversation between him and Ray Allen, they were just, I guess, just chopping up, just talking. And he was saying how he continues to challenge himself. And one of those things is by, getting an education. And so Ray Allen's actually working on his master's right now is what JR told me. And so he was inspired by that. And the decision to go to A&T specifically came from, talks with Chris Paul, who has a class here at A&T, and he said he knows Terrence J as well, who's a famous, entertainment reporter, host of 106 in Park, who graduated from A&T. And so that, along with our liberal studies program, which is ranked second out of the top 10 liberal studies programs among HBCUs. So he really did do his research. It just wasn't like an overnight decision.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the golf in a second here, but just to clarify for everybody here, because JR, it seems like, has felt the need to clarify for everybody here that he is going to classes, like he's doing homework, right?
Yeah.
Like this is a real, it's not just like a stunt where he pops in and sort of takes photos. He's like actually a student.
Yes, yes. And he was saying how in our interview, he said he did his first PowerPoint for an African-American studies class or something like that. He had to do his first PowerPoint. He's been tweeting about, writing papers and everything like that. So he's very, very adamant about truly doing the work himself and doing what it needs to take to make himself, an actual true college student.
Yeah, there are so many misunderstandings about J.R. Smith because J.R. Smith East, as you know, he's been considered like this human meme. And so he's synonymous with drinking Hennessy, which he had to debunk. He's this party guy. He's shirtless all the time. But it sounds like when you talk to him, he wanted to dispel a lot of those misunderstandings, those misapprehensions about how he lives.
To be honest with you, with that whole situation, I feel like if people were to put themselves in his shoes and his lifestyle and his background and to see how there's so much more to him than what's on the surface and to just not make ignorant comments like that. Obviously, he already mentioned that he's trying to disassociate himself from that joke, which he doesn't even he didn't even create and he doesn't even like to drink it, to be honest with you.
Right.
He doesn't even like to drink it. So just kind of focusing on the good that he's doing. He was saying, you know, I've heard more about this and more bad things, and, you know, give more praise to him rather than give more criticism, and just admire the fact that, you know, he's an older Black man trying to go back and educate himself. So that's the main story here.
So the golf thing on all of this, how does that come together? Because I know JR is a big golfer. What's the process for him to walk onto the team at A&T?
So Coach Watkins, he originally received a call from Chris Paul's brother, who was saying how, hey, I got somebody I need that wants to talk to you, and that's J.R. Smith, and he, you know, wants to walk on the team. And Coach Watkins, he's, if you meet him, he is a wonderful man, but he's nobody to mess around with. And he said, hey, I don't care if you're J.R. Smith or, you know, if you're the next person, but if you're not going to make my golf team better, if you're not going to contribute to this team, then I don't want you and I don't care who you are. And so J.R. kind of took that on the chin, and he still tried out, and everything just kind of went well. And the whole process of him actually becoming a student athlete, they treated him like as if he was any other person. He had to get approved by the NCAA. And so once that news, you know, came about that he's actually on the team, it's been very exciting.
So as a student, I mean, what are his long-term goals? I mean, that's what you ask any college freshman, right? Like, what are your future goals, J.R. Smith? When you asked him that, what did he tell you?
Well, one of his biggest long-term goals is just to get more kids into golf. He mentioned how with this degree, he would love to be able to teach kids about life and, you know, education, because he's big into mentorship. He does have four young girls who he said are picking up the game of golf. And overall, he would like to create a STEM program, which STEM, the acronym, it stands for science, technology, engineering, and math, a school centered around that, but also introducing kids to the athletic side of things. So incorporating golf in there as well.
So East, it occurs to me that you're the upperclassman in this dynamic. You're the senior, J.R. Smith is the freshman. So what advice, what counsel do you have for the new kid on the block here, as you are the person with all the experience at A&T?
Advice that I would have is just to keep your head down. You came here with a goal in mind, and you know you're going to accomplish it. College is not easy for anybody on any level, not just from the educational standpoint, but, you know, it's just all the transitions and being organized and just everything that it comes with. It's truly a whole learning experience tied into 4 very long years. I would just say to keep his head down and just to remember his true reasoning for coming here, and that's just to make the world a better place and to inspire younger kids and younger generations.
And if he has any advice about, like, homework and stuff, are you available?
Yes, of course.
For that?
I'll be happy to help him.
East El-Dockery, thank you so much for taking us back to school.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. And just a quick heads up here for you guys, we're taking a production break next week, so we'll be bringing you some of our favorite episodes from the past year. And these are all the stories that if you missed them the first time, you will definitely want to listen this time around. And even if you have heard them, we think they are truly worth another listen. So enjoy the break, and I'll talk to you after Labor Day.